Do you want to reduce stress and get better sleep? I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman with exciting news about an effective non-drug solution. The Zen by Nuvana. It's a safe, easy way to reduce stress and anxiety, improve your mood, sleep, and focus naturally. Zen is state-of-the-art. It connects to patented earbuds and uses your music to safely and conveniently deliver electronic signals that stimulate your vagus nerve, a major communication pathway between the brain and most major organs. The Nuvana app links Zen to your mobile device using Bluetooth so you can easily control and customize your experience. Choose from a variety of signal patterns to find what works best for you. Zen is safe, easy, and effective. And for a limited time, get 20% off the exclusive Intelligent Medicine Bundle. For more information and to order, go to NuvanaLife.com/Hoffman. That's Nuvana, N-E-U-V-A-N-A. NuvanaLife.com/Hoffman. Stress less. Focus more. Sleep better. Electronically. The Zen by Nuvana. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's a quiet time of the year. A lot of people on vacation. A lot of people getting prepared to come back to work, but it's kind of weird because a lot of us haven't been at work, so it's kind of the summer that never was. I hope that you've had a good summer. I certainly have. I've taken advantage of the fact that there's no place to go, so I've had a staycation and lots and lots of wonderful cycling and swimming and running and generally spending time outdoors. How about you, Layla? How you doing?
Oh, okay. Yeah, the summer that wasn't is exactly right. And, you know, in some ways it feels like, I mean, the time from mid-March to the end of April lasted, in my mind, 5 months in and of itself.
Yeah.
However, then it's like you kind of acclimate. And now, wow, it's already the end of August. So it's really something.
Right. And normally, I would look forward to, coming back from the beach. I'm looking forward to, all the wonderful museum exhibits and all the wonderful, cultural things happening in New York.
Museums are reopening. Plays.
Yes, museums are reopening. There's going to be some limits to that. You'll have to sign up and, hopefully there won't be a big rush for tickets to go to the museum. Some people will be daunted. So they won't even try to go to the museum. Others will rush back to the museum in an effort to restore a sense of normalcy. So we'll see what's happening here in New York. Hope that the lockdown is proceeding successfully wherever you are listening from, whether it's in the continental United States or across the world. Today we saw a patient from Turkey. Well, we didn't see him. We saw him on Zoom. But, the international barriers are being broken down for sure.
Hmm. Yeah. That was simple as anything.
Indeed.
From across the world. Yeah. That's great.
So we're looking to answer your questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. Please send your questions, and they are the fodder for this broadcast. Okay, so let's get to questions. But before we get to questions, one of the interesting stories today is that this is another casualty of the COVID-19 pandemic. KFC drops finger-licking good slogan amid coronavirus. And I thought it was like something from the Babylon Bee. I thought this was a gag story. But I see it.
You mean it's not?
Yeah, no, it's for real. BBC News, The Guardian, The New York Post, all of them are reporting that KFC is nixing the finger-licking good slogan amid coronavirus. They say, look, but it's not gone for good. They say, here's a statement. It says that it would temporarily drop its finger-licking good slogan amid the COVID-19 pandemic. We find ourselves in a unique situation, having an iconic slogan that doesn't quite fit in the current environment. While we are pausing the use of its finger-licking good, Rest assured, the food craved by so many people around the world isn't changing one bit. Okay, so there is a slight problem with this because it ignores the science. So when it flaunts the science, in fact, there is no evidence that licking your fingers transmits coronavirus. Even if you were to, dip your fingers into coronavirus-laden drool and then pick up your KFC and then lick your fingers, that would be not a very realistic mode of transmission. Now, if you were to do the same thing, and maybe rub your eyes or pick your nose, that might be a mode of transmission because it is thought that the main route of transmission of coronavirus is via respiratory, passages, and mostly through aerosolized droplets. So they're, it flaunts the science. You know, it's sort of like, a lot of things are going, they're tearing down statues. They actually dropped the name of the Washington Redskins. It's the Washington team now. We don't even know what the name's going to be. And no more finger licking good.
Right. And no more Dixie chicks. They're just chicks now.
And that's kind of pejorative, too. It's like, hey, I'm not even sure that's good. No more Aunt Jemima. Aunt Jemima also rebranded.
No more master bathroom.
No more master bathroom. That's right. Master bedroom. That's where the master sleeps.
Master suite is what I meant to say. Yeah.
Right.
Right. Master bedroom. Sorry. That's right.
We just sleep in shotgun shacks out on the plantation while the master sleeps in the master bedroom. Come on. Let's, it's a bridge too far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. And, judging from the reaction of people, I put this on social media. They are, up in arms. And by the way, I am not a fan of KFC because to my mind,
we don't even know if that's chicken.
Yeah. We don't, the apocryphal story of the rat that fell into the KFC vat, and then somebody was chewing on it and decided that the bones were a little too delicate and small for it to really be a chicken. There's a far cry between eating a roasted chicken, that is, popped in the oven and lovingly cooked for, 70 minutes at 375, with your favorite
3.5 to 4 pound bird. Yep.
With your garlic and with your, lemon and your garden seasonings, versus KFC, which is a lot of, basically a lot of batter.
And
the batter is it's flour and oil, usually the poorest quality because how often do they change the oil? That's got to get kind of expensive to use extra virgin olive oil every time you cook up a batch and then you throw it out. No, probably not.
They're not using that. No.
Actually, sometimes I see these trucks pulling up to fast food eateries that have long hoses. And there must be some kind of receptacle in the basement or something of those places that collects all the oil. And they collect the oil as kind of surplus scrap oil, which can be used for I don't know what. Maybe they
biofuel?
Use it as a – it's biofuel. I think it is biofuel. Yeah. Because, they can filter it and burn it or reprocess it into something that's combustible. Mm-hmm. Biofuel. So, if you want, flour encrusted chicken pieces that are cooked in biofuel, you don't bother to lick your fingers because you'll get less of that toxic stuff in you. Right.
And, when you first mentioned that headline, Dr. Hoffman, I just had a quick visual of somebody licking a gloved hand. Yuck.
Somebody wrote, now it's like lick your mask.
True.
Because it's going to get kind of greasy. Anyway, let's not dwell on that. I think we have some questions. So radioprogram@AOL.com, the destination for questions. We had a question about catching COVID-19 again.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, can you get COVID-19 twice?
Right. And so there was a report early on, I think it was from March or April, about a South Korean who purportedly caught it, recovered, and then caught it again. And, you know, I must confess that I greeted that with skepticism. I said, you know, there may be some sort of testing anomaly. There may have been, they tested negative, but then they tested positive. The test is not 100% accurate, and it probably was the same infection that at one point was detected, and then it wasn't detected, and then it was redetected. You know, and I said, yeah, this is not definitive that this person really re-caught COVID-19. But now come reports, and there's like a few scattered reports, one from the United States, I believe, and then a couple of reports from Europe. I think one report from Belgium and one from another country, where people got it twice. And so you might say, well, it maybe was a false positive test. No, actually, they went so far as not just to test, but to genetically profile the coronavirus that caused the infection, because it's the official designation of the coronavirus that causes this is SARS-CoV-2, as opposed to SARS-CoV-1 that caused the SARS pandemic in 2003. So now we're onto SARS-CoV-2. But what they found was that there was, while a lot of similarities, there were some very slight genetic changes between the first infection and the second infection, which has some implications, some really interesting implications. One is that theoretically it would be possible to get it again, even if you've had it. So if you're walking around, you'd say, look, I've had it, I can go party hardy, throw caution to the winds. Not necessarily. And it was thought that part of that was due to the waning of immunity that occurs after a few months. But part of that may be due to the fact that it is a slightly novel agent. Once it mutates, it doesn't mutate as rapidly as the flu virus, but it does mutate. And so it may be different enough so that the immune system doesn't have a complete memory of it. What is good about this is the good news. First, the good news is that, the bad news already where it is that you can get it again. The good news is that the people who acquired it a second time had very mild infections.
I was going to say, because once it mutates, doesn't it become weaker?
Well, that's one part of it, but it may also be that people achieve partial immunity by having had the previous infection. So that also kind of goes along with the theory that some people out there walking around and they may have less of a severe reaction to SARS-CoV-2 because in 2011, they caught a cold that was also a coronavirus that was similar, not identical. So they're going to get milder illness because they have partial immunity from a related coronavirus. Here, we actually have the same identical, not quite identical, but similar coronavirus that people acquired before the second infection. And so they have partial immunity and it's milder. But, you're right. There is this thing of viral attenuation, which is that as viruses mutate, they generally get weaker rather than stronger.
COVID-19.5.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. It's not COVID-20 yet. It's not entirely different entity, but it is, a slightly different variant. Now, the other implication for this is, let's say we develop a vaccine that is perfect for one genetically sequenced coronavirus. Well, there's going to be some genetic drift, and it may be by the time we release the vaccine, it'll be a slightly different coronavirus to which the vaccine does not confer protection. And,
isn't that the same with flu shots?
Big time. Anyway? Big time. Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's why the flu shot is anywhere from 20 to 40%. At best, maybe 50% effective.
you know, from year to year. In some years, it's a really, you know, our prediction of what it's going to look like is way off. But there's much more instability with the flu viruses than there is with coronavirus. Coronavirus, they say, is relatively stable, but all viruses mutate and change. Mm-hmm. And so there's going to be a little bit of, you know, slight changes in the sequences that render the shot less specifically targeted. So mm-hmm. there you have it.
Interesting. Interesting. All right. So whether you can get it again is kind of debatable. All right. That's interesting.
I think it's going to be, you know, look, we've had hundreds of thousands of people with coronavirus. And these instances that they're reporting on are very few and far between. And they're probably missing a lot of instances. But the fact that it was so hard to find these rather rare outlier cases suggests that it's kind of an unusual phenomenon and not a generalized phenomenon. Now, it may be that, you know, in 2021 or 2022, people will come down sick more often, even the people who've already been sick. We don't know. But, you know, it just kind of adds to the this virus continues to surprise us in, you know, in terms of the manifestations of the virus, you know, the fact that some people develop myocarditis, some people develop strokes. I read something concerning, which is in many athletes, even relatively young athletes, they have really severe performance problems after having the virus. So they have to be very careful when they resume exercise because they may have suffered heart damage or heart inflammation, and they can't just go back to the routine. You know, athletes are, you know, no pain, no gain. You know, it's like, I'll push myself, you know, I'll, you know, I'm feeling a little under the weather, but I'll push real hard. Not a good idea if you've had COVID-19 because, you know, you have to kind of slowly reacclimate to your previous level of, you know, athleticism. So, depending on the severity of your case, of course, but they're discovering that a fairly high percentage of young people with relatively mild infections have some heart inflammation. So it's, you know, it's not inconsequential. And yet there's some people who get it and they're fine. You know, they just get it and get over it.
Right, right. And we do have another question about COVID. Which would be better, population-wise, passive, like herd immunity, the passive way, or getting a vaccine?
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's a good question. You know, a lot of people, the people in the natural medicine community, like myself, instinctively believe that the way we acquire immunity naturally is superior to some sort of synthetic immunity. In other words, that we engineer a way of becoming immune. That the body, you know, in a natural illness, develops a more comprehensive immune response than in a synthetically induced immune event.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like our childhood illnesses, like I had measles and chicken pox and mumps all by the time I was maybe six.
Right.
Or seven.
Right.
Or something like that.
But, you know, let's take chicken pox as an example. You know, chicken pox is a natural event and we get it. And when you're young, it's not such a big deal. But chicken pox lurks in the body. It's zoster, varicella zoster. And it can come back to haunt us as adults as shingles. Mm-hmm. And so it might be to our advantage to get a vaccine for chickenpox to not get it in the first place. Now, we don't know, and this would be really an impossible experiment, except, you know, when we look at communities that don't vaccinate, which are fewer and fewer, to determine if having all these childhood illnesses and even, you know, relatively serious illnesses like hepatitis, you know, which hepatitis A in a child is a bad illness, but it's not, you know, a killer illness. And, you know, to to vaccinate against many of these childhood illnesses deprives our immune system of a natural boot camp, you know, or a way to evolve and experience pathogens the way right. our bodies were designed to. So
it's getting the vaccine is like pass, go, collect 200, but not as boot camp.
Yeah.
Going
yeah.
through it as boot camp.
So, you know, will there be, you know, for example, more autoimmune diseases? Will there be other health consequences? Will there be a less robust immune response to other things? You know, we don't know. And I don't think we're going to be able to successfully study that because, you know, what's the double-blind placebo-controlled trial for that? Is to take right. a bunch of babies and not vaccinate them against anything and then watch them until they die of natural causes or something else.
That would never pass into your IRB.
Exactly. You know, and but there will be populations in different parts of the world who are not vaccinated, but then their circumstances are different. They may be, you know, tribes in Africa, you know, but mm-hmm. fewer and fewer human populations are not vaccinated. You know, there are too many variables to really decide, oh, are they healthier? You know, are they less likely to get autoimmune diseases? Well, it may be that they don't get vaccines and they don't get, you know, lupus and rheumatoid arthritis and, you know, autoimmune thyroiditis.
Yeah.
But it could be also that they've had more germ exposure, that they have a more, you know, a more diverse microbiome, you know, that they eat.
Yeah.
You know, they have more, the hygiene hypothesis, more germs.
It's almost like the immune system has been trained properly mm-hmm. to deal with life instead of super hygiene and then a vaccination.
Right. But something like that. But it's a high-stakes proposition because, you know, either you thrive or you die. Mm. You know, I mean, it's there's mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, you look at the, just go to a graveyard, you know, that's an old graveyard in New England. And, you know, you look at, you know, Emma, whatever, you know, Emma Jones, you know, grave. And it's like, you know, 1666 to 1679, you know, that was her mm. life. And, you know, she died in, you know, early adolescence, yeah. You know, probably of some kind of infectious disease. And, you know, it was not uncommon for women to have 10 children, you know, five of whom survived.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
you know, there mm-hmm. was a lot of dying. And so, yeah, we're getting into some really, you know, philosophic territory here.
Right, right, yeah. Okay. So, Dr. Hoffman, in your estimation, when do you think a vaccine for this will become available?
Well, I think soon. Already there are vaccines available. There's the Chinese vaccine, which mm-hmm. they're experimenting on in Pakistan. You know, they found their, you know, third world country. And you know, although, you know, much of Pakistan is advanced and westernized, I mean, there's a, you know, great deal of poverty and, you know, they may be desperate to contain the vaccine. So they're happy to adopt a Chinese vaccine or maybe some underhanded deal is going on, you know, where some people get paid off to subject their constituents to the vaccine because they're on the take from, you know, Chinese interests. Russia has a vaccine. You know, Putin triumphantly announced it, which is...
Yes, he gave it to his daughter.
Which is really interesting because there's been no scientific publications whatsoever about it. It's like, we have the vaccine. And to prove it, my daughter has taken it. And, you know, also probably, you know, maybe the guy who's like languishing in a Berlin hospital, you know, they put some of the vaccine in his tea, you know, who knows. You know, so it's utter lack of transparency and, same thing with the Chinese. So, but we are developing vaccines here and, yeah. you know, there's some worry that one of the top officials in the FDA said, you know, I'm going to resign if they release a half-baked vaccine just for political reasons, you know, just to reassure the public that there's a vaccine. But, you know, there's such a pressure to have a vaccine
yeah.
That, you know, on news that the vaccine is available, the stock market goes up hundreds of points.
Right.
Because it's like everybody's holding their breath to see if there's going to be a vaccine. But, you know, do we want a rush job on a vaccine? Do we want an unsafe vaccine? Will there be public acceptance of a vaccine? We need a lot of transparency, unlike the Russians and the Chinese, on, you know, the safety, the side effects, the efficacy of the vaccine. And by the way, the vaccine is not, no vaccine is 100% effective, and they're going to accept a vaccine. They say they want a 50% threshold. So it means, you know, if you go to, you know, a crowded frat party with a bunch of, you know, kids who are, you know, feel like they're coming down with COVID-19, you've got about a 50% less chance of getting it, but you could still definitely get it. You know,
right.
You can't abandon caution because you've got the vaccine. It's not 100%.
Right. And I've heard often enough times from people, you know, now and then say, well, I went and got my flu shot and then I got the flu.
Right. Was it coincidence or was it the reaction to the flu shot? You know, who knows?
Yeah.
But I mean, you hear that a lot. Anyway, boy, is there going to be controversy when this gets released. I mean, there's actually the Australian Prime Minister, said that when the vaccine's available, they're going to make it mandatory. But he hastily retracted that, you know, because it was like there was a firestorm press, like, you know, you can't do that. That's a violation of civil liberties. You know,
bodily sovereignty. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, although, you know, it's not the U.S., where we put a high premium on personal liberty. I mean, it is a Anglo-Saxon tradition country, and, you know, you can't enforce these edicts in Western countries.
And wasn't there back in, I want to say the original swine flu, but I'm thinking 1976 flu?
Yeah, that was under...
where they came out with the vaccine
Ford.
Too quickly and there was injury?
Yeah, that was the Guillain-Barre outbreak that was... And that didn't come to
and
anything
that's
anyway.
Terrible.
Yeah,
that's
that was
terrible.
Devastating, yeah. So that was the swine flu debacle. Mm-hmm. So... because they rushed it. And they had one military recruit die of this, and they thought this is going to sweep the country. And they had, you know, sort of naive faith in vaccine technology. And it didn't work out well. And it also damaged the reputation of vaccines. You know, it's more people who are anti-vax cite that as a reason to refuse vaccination. So, there's a lot. It's a high-stakes poker game for the vaccine scientists and people in the, you know, public health arena, you know, to stake their entire professional reputations on a brand new vaccine that may or may not work, that may have other ramifications. It's going to be very interesting when that, you know, gets rolled out.
So I guess the passive form rather than a vaccine would be like go to a measles party.
Well, you know, but we could say go to a COVID-19 party, but then what? You know, even if you have a mild case, what are you going to have, like, you know, weeks of fatigue and, you know, myocarditis and, you know, debilitation? Mm. It's no picnic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, you roll the dice. You could have, you know, asymptomatic, mild case, or you could have devastating consequences. It's, you know, it is a bit of a merit system, but not entirely so. Some younger, healthy people get... You know, ostensibly healthy people get very sick. All right. Well, it's a good point at which to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. Give us a preview. What's in part two?
Oh, I'm depressed, maybe for the wrong reasons. Can you tell me about Saw Palmetto?
Okay. that sounds like a little bit of a non sequitur, but we'll try and tie that all together. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. We'll be right back.